This is Average Advice. I'm Zar.
And I'm Tim. Average guys, average stories, average advice.
Welcome to season two, where new and exciting things are on the way.
Stay tuned and stay average.
You think we overpromised?
Nah. Zabe, welcome back.
Welcome. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Average Advice, episode 58.
I love how we stopped saying season two. We're just like, yeah, whatever. This is just 58. It's been a couple weeks since we recorded the last episode.
Apologies to everyone. We didn't have an episode last week because we struggled to find another guest. Yeah. So all you bastards listening, if you want to come on the show, let us know.
To be fair, like our guest, current guest in our hot seat, Maddie, she did say that she was keen to come on Monday, and I forgot to message her again. But welcome to the show, Mads.
Oh, Tim.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks, guys.
Welcome, Maddie.
So Maddie was one of my first friends in Sydney that I made because she used to live with Ashley.
I did. We soon became husband and wife.
We are. She's still wifey in my phone. That's actually a funny story. So when we went to our mutual friend Jade's like group, like I don't know, it was a 25th? What was her birthday?
I think it was 25th.
I think it was 25th, yeah. So we had this big group house that we all went to, which was really fun. And I was like, everyone was down near the water and I was doing something by myself. And I come down and Matt's like pretty drunk at the time. She's like, husband! And I'm like, what the fuck? And she apparently the people there thought we were like husband and wife. So she just went with it.
Everyone else there had a partner. So I was like, makes sense.
that is literally my life these days. Everyone's fucking coupled up. Even you coupled up now, bitch. I'm not okay with it. I'm the only single person here.
Well, Tim, I know. There's only one person that can fix that.
Mate, I'm trying. The dating life is a hard, hard, fickle bitch, all right?
Mate, you're in a city with 5 million people. I'm sure you can find
someone. You think that's hard? It's a lot harder. When everyone's coupled up and no one's like there to wingman you anymore, like it's just a hard life.
Tell me one time I haven't been there to wingman you.
Wingman
me?
Like half of your friends are lesbians. Know. They know how to talk to chicks. You have so many wing women available.
But no, I went on a date like last week, maybe the week before, randomly on a Friday. Like I was, you know, because I go through like stages where I'm like, oh yeah, I should probably go find, I should probably put some effort in, you know, try to find someone. So I'll start swiping as you do. And then you meet people and I was like, all right, cool. Let's just go out for some drinks and dinner or whatever. And Newtown's great because you can literally, everyone's happy to meet in Newtown. And I went out and it was really good. Like the date went really well, ended it with a kiss, everything. Then when I got home, like gave him my number off Tinder and we started texting. And then we had plans to like meet up again on the Sunday. And she's like, all right, no worries, I'll message you. And then she just never messaged me. And I was like, well, I'm not going to chase you. Like if you're not keen. And then we just didn't text again. So it's just like, it takes effort.
Unfortunately, yeah. I mean, with my current partner, Yaz, like I feel like I was going through obviously the dating game as well. It was a lot of that, like message someone, they show a bit of interest. You like talk, you might go on a date or two. And it just fizzles out from someone.
It's my fault though, because I don't chase it. Like there's a fine line between chasing and, you know, desperate, I suppose. Like, and that's the thing where I'm like, I just don't care enough. If you're not going to show interest, I don't then chase to find, to make the interest.
As someone who never, ever, ever messages anyone and leaves, I don't care if you're my dying grandmother, I'm going to leave you in red for 3 weeks.
Accurate. I'm her husband. She does that to me all the time.
Just follow up, man.
I do.
Just follow up.
Yeah. I don't know. I suppose it's different in the courting game. Because it's like, I suppose I'm one of those people that I'm like, I will put interest in if I feel like there's interest being coming back to me. If I don't feel like they're interested, I just don't, like, I'm not going to keep chasing.
Yeah.
Because I'm like, oh, I feel like I'm annoying you now.
Well, that's called a predator. That's
exactly. Exactly. Kinda, I don't want to be that. I don't want to be a predator.
It's kind of tough, you know, in the modern era with all this social media technology, everyone's got phones, they're constant texting each other. Sometimes I think maybe it's almost better to like try and keep it simple to like, back in the old days where you just talk to them face to face and just like try and go to events that they're going to go to. And like, I don't know if you like know some of their friends, it's probably,
well, I think, yeah, I think just like finding a couple or finding someone that you like within like a subdivision of your friendship group is, I suppose, is the most ideal way. Because it's like, I make a very, very good first impression face to face. I don't make that good impressions over text until I meet them face to face. Because a lot of my jokes, you know, go over people's heads or they come across douchey because they probably are. But
just meet them in the wild, Tim. That's my approach.
Yeah, no, I agree. But that's where I need the wingman to like, because
you don't need a wingman. I met Lou straight off the bat, just saw her in the distance. You there. You're hot. I want to kiss you.
You're a lesbian. You're a lesbian.
It worked.
What does a lesbian bring on a second date? A U-Haul. like you guys move super quick, super easy. It's same with gays. Like all the gay people I know, they're like, what do you mean? It's super easy to find a guy. And I'm like, yeah, for you, motherfucker.
You don't go out anymore, Tim.
On the straight world.
You don't go out anymore, Tim.
I know.
So you're not going to meet him.
And that's exactly it. Like I chill out at home too often. But at the same time, like, I'm not going to go out by myself. I need people to come with me, to come out with me.
Maddie, curious question. Because I obviously just found out now that you're lesbian. Is that correct? Oh, yeah. So,
a new lesbian. Would you new say? Lesbian.
Oh, new. New lesbian.
How does an old lesbian work?
Well, like, you didn't know you were lesbian.
Wait, are you bi or lesbian?
I've always hooked up with chicks. Never thought I was gay. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely sleeping with them, but that's not gay. Oh. That's just like women are hot.
Can agree
there. I can't statements. Date one. That's so crazy. So only the last couple of years.
So my question is, do you think, I don't know, if maybe this is just individual case by case basis. Do you think being a girl, it's easier for you to know how to interact with a girl or like how to know what they're interested in, like
somehow you know what girls want.
I thought you were going to ask me a raunchier question than that, but
no, this is a PG podcast.
The raunchy ones come after the 15 minute mark.
No, girls are absolutely terrifying. As someone who has dated men for the majority of my life, men are
That's reassuring.
Men are simple. It's like, you know what they want, even if you can't be bothered. If you just put on a low-cut top, you're already halfway there.
They're very simple creatures.
Girls are much, much harder to court. Mm-hmm. I do have a...
Oh, well, that makes me feel better.
Makes me feel better. Myself. I told you, Tyler. You guys were literally just for the last fucking 5 minutes saying, wow, it's so easy to find women, and then you just completely contradict yourself.
I was one of those people that were like, oh, yeah, I wish I was a lesbian. It's so much easier. I can confirm it is not. It is not. Women are complicated.
I kind of wish I was gay. It definitely would be easier. I'd have more fashion sense too. Like, there's so many benefits to being gay.
So, Yaz follows a Dungeons & Dragons YouTube series. And she was showing me a new one that they've made last night, which is Dungeons and Drag Queens. And all of the players are just drag queens. And I was just like, man, it'd be so fun to be like part of that community. Like, they just like love doing that. And like, I watch it. I go, oh, that's hilarious. But like, I wouldn't do it. Obviously.
Why?
I
mean,
I don't know. I just like, it doesn't appeal to me, you know, but like I can see like them having so much fun. I'm like, oh,
I would never get up on stage as a drag queen, but I'll definitely dress up as a drag queen.
I think you'd look in the mirror and be like, ooh, I look kind of cute right now. I feel kind of fancy.
I do have the butt for it. So
you do.
It's possible. You do. But drag queens, there was one time I was out, like there was this drag show on randomly. And like, I went up and talked to him afterwards. And it was really funny because like they started talking in like their drag voice, like super high pitched, and then halfway through just went like real deep. He's like, "Yeah, what are you talking about?" It was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. So, anyway, so Mads, so you work in the pharmaceutical industry.
Yeah, ashamed to say it, but
How long have you been within that industry?
I went straight from the lab to pharma like 6.5 years ago. Yeah.
So what was the lab? Were you making drugs?
I was a research scientist, so doing everything, doing surgery, doing preclinical work, all the nerdy lab kind of stuff. And then when I looked at my bank account one day, I was like, yeah, can't keep doing that.
Yeah. Don't pay. The research don't pay well, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I used to lurk in a lab as well. I was in pathology before the job I'm in now. And the work was interesting, but yeah, definitely didn't pay as great as it could have.
Yeah.
And so I just like after a while I was like, I can't sustain my life with this pay. I've got to move.
Yeah, pathology.
I know the feels.
Pathology, I thought pathology would pay pretty well.
It pays well if you're
like scientist.
Pathologist. Yeah. If you are a pathologist, like your actual doctor of pathology, you'd probably get paid.
So pathologists have to be a doctor, right? Because they're just taking
they're actual doctors.
Like the stool samples and the blood samples and stuff.
No. They go to medical school. There's the doctors. They'll receive when the results come in, like a specimen comes in and they do the testing, they'll actually like look at the results and interpret if there's like disease and like they'll write about like,
oh, he's got too many white blood cells or whatever.
Yeah, and then they'll send those reports to the GPs and go, hey, your patient is suffering from these diseases.
Who's the person that takes your blood? Results? Like if you need to go to the pathologist, that's a pathologist.
They're literally called phlebotomists. Mm-hmm. Oh. No, they're just some guy off the street that gets trained to take blood.
That's terrifying. That's fucking terrifying.
Well, they get trained, but they don't need any qualifications.
Really?
What? Maybe they get like a training course
as someone
or
who is a qualified phlebotomist to have to pay for my low pay as a scientist. Yeah, it's literally like a 2-week course.
Are you serious? Mm-hmm. So I'm letting these people fucking stick shit into my vein and they could just be like every average Joe off the
trust me, Tim, you do not want a doctor to take your blood. You want that person off the street or the nurse to do it.
Yeah,
doctors are notoriously the worst for taking blood.
Well, that's because they never do it. Yeah. They get the nurses to do it, right? That's like
so
differentiate.
I worked in specimen reception, so we would receive the samples from the couriers and put them into the system and put the tests in and send them off. And the people that collected the blood we called collectors, which were the phlebotomists, and the collectors were like the bottom of the bottom. Like, because they would like pre-code the tests before they came in. They put them into the system. So when we get them, we just scan it and make sure it's correct and put it through. So it's like easier. And so many times we'd be like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, and we'd be like, fuck the collectors. Fuck it, what do they know? So
I think in every job though, there's always that one part of the job where you're just like fucking idiots. For me, it's the ones, like, I don't want to say the team because I currently still work for that company for the next couple of weeks, but there is a team that their job is, I'm just going to say it, it's the reporting team. They suck. The reporting team, their only job is to deal with data and Excel spreadsheets and all that stuff, and somehow we have to go in there and fix all their work. I'm like, how can you not even create a table in Excel correctly? Like, they get rid of all their friggin' all the formulas and all the Excels. So I just spend like an hour creating this Excel spreadsheet, putting all the formulas in the right spot, and then they come in the next day and then fuck it all up. And I'm like, how is this possible? Like, data scientists get paid so much. How can you not even know how to use Excel?
It
blows my mind.
One of the most humbling experiences of my life was I worked as both a pathologist and a phlebotomist. And I was doing the actual pathology for this sample. And similar to what you said, Zara, I was like, who the F did this? And motherfucker, you've just fucked it up so bad. Yeah, it was me.
So,
were you the only one that noticed that? That would have been fine. You'd be like, oh, no.
Oh, no. I was speaking to the other people in the lab like, look at this guy. Look at it.
Oh, yeah. You have a bit of a lab bitch. Dude, so we did a thing where, like, obviously if something wasn't collected correctly or something was missed or something was done incorrectly or something like that, we'd have to code for a recollect, which means the collection center would have to call the patient and be like, hey, we fucked up. You have to come back in and we have to recollect this blood.
How could they fuck up?
Which was huge, all like big no-nos for the collection team because that's like bad customer service, KPIs, all that stuff. So whenever we code a recollect, it was like a big deal. One time I coded a recollect because this person collected these tubes and froze them. What you were supposed to do is spin them in a centrifuge, take out the plasma or the serum, and then you freeze the serum, but she froze it as whole blood. She didn't spin. So we sent that in and we're like, well, we can't use this. Like, you've frozen the blood whole. We need you to recollect, spin it, then freeze the serum. And she called me up like, why are you recollecting this? I'm going to get in so much trouble.
Do your job.
You fucked up. What do you mean? You did it wrong. Well, you can't. There's nothing we can do. So, like, don't get mad at us.
So I know of centrifuge. It separates things in the blood, right? Mm-hmm. What's it take out?
It doesn't take out. All it does is separate it into layers. So, you know how if you have a whole blood, right, most of it's going to be red blood cells. You're going to have serum. You're also going to have plasma. So it's like your different white blood cells versus the filler content versus the red blood cells.
Well, okay, so once it's been separated then by the centrifuge, how do you then separate it out of the
pipette?
Syringe.
No, pipette, yeah. And you can like suck up just the serum and leave the red cells in the tube. Store that somewhere and then you use the serum to run the tests.
The more you know, science, right?
Science. Speaking of fuck ups though, Tim.
Oh God.
When I was working.
I thought you were about to throw me under the bus hardcore then. I'm like,
well,
it's
not you. It's just like because you work in IT.
Go on.
So obviously I'm in the public service and we have a lot of IT issues. Yep. And, you know, I give them a bit of slack because, you know, IT is a big department. They've got to deal with a lot of staff. A lot of people having issues. But one time I was having an issue where I can't remember exactly, but like I couldn't log into my Outlook.
Okay.
Like I just couldn't log into
it. Was it opening and you couldn't log in?
No, it just wasn't letting me log in.
Did you try restarting?
And so I called IT. Yeah, I tried restarting all that. I called IT. I was like, I can't log into my Outlook.
You reprofile that shit.
Blah, blah, blah. This is happening. And then the guy I spoke to was like, oh, like he did a bit of digging and he's like, oh yeah, look, I don't think there's anything we can do. You probably have to get a new laptop.
Fuck off.
I was like, okay. Fuck. And even in my head I was like, that doesn't so sound wrong. Right. I feel like it's a profile issue, not a hardware issue. And so I was like, all right, he organized with the laptop bar to get a new laptop. I literally drove to Woden. Maddie, if you don't know where Woden is, that's like a 25-minute drive from my house. It's like halfway across Canberra. Drove to Woden, picked up a new laptop, went home. Same problem.
That's so
and
hard.
I was just like, oh wow, called up the service desk again. I was like, this is what happened. Explained everything that happened. And the guy I spoke to is like,
what the fuck?
What? Yeah. No, I'll just do a profile refresh, fix the problem.
Re-profile.
It took like 5 minutes. I was like,
that's like the most basic thing that you learn on the service desk is how to fix your Outlook. Outlook, Skype issues, those are the first things. And surprisingly, it's very easy. Like you just have to reprofile. Anyone can do it. You don't even need to be IT. You can just go in.
That's why I was so shocked. I was like, isn't this, because like I knew from all your stories in service desk, I mean, isn't this like a number one, like easy bottom of the table problem?
Outlook is one
that
of the
you should know what to do. What? It's like he almost overthought it. Like there's no way that's that simple.
What kills me is because I currently work for defense for the next couple of weeks. But when I was on the defense service desk, because I'm still with defense, but I'm up higher, I have to call the service desk because I don't have any of my fucking privilege powers anymore, which is so annoying because most of the time I can just fix my own issues. But so I call the service desk for some issue. Now we have this like network drive that is designed for, I can't go into too much detail, but designed to put something in there to get it to something else, right? So on one of the low side, on this side, it was working, but on the other side, it wasn't. So I called up the service desk and I was like, hey, I've got this network drive. For some reason, it's just not connecting to the other network. And he's like, oh, okay. And he starts going, and I could tell what he's doing because he was just looking for knowledge and stuff because that's what you do. But he started saying, he's like, oh, look, yeah, look, that's not really our domain. You just have to call this number. And I'm like, no, that's not correct, you fucking idiot. So then as soon as I hung up, I'm like, well, I'm not going to call that number. That was really dumb. And I just Google it myself. Like on the knowledge database, I just do it myself. And then the first thing that comes up, it tells me exactly how to fix it. And I was like, the fuck, bro? Like how is it that I'm doing your job still? Like, it just kills my soul. Service desk people, I refuse to call them now because I'm just like, I know more than them. So why would I call them? If I can't do it, they can't do it.
We can do. Unfortunately, like when it's a problem and I know how to fix it, but I can't because I don't have administrator access. I'm just like, well, I have to call service.
Yeah, that's exactly where I'm at. It's so annoying. It's so annoying. Like my colleague Lachlan, he was he started at the service desk with me, and we're both the same because like multiple things will go wrong. We're like, we know how to fix it, but we can't, and it fucking drives me crazy. But like one of my colleagues came in, fresh guy. He had the same issue as you with the Outlook, and he said he was on hold with the service desk for like 45 minutes. I come in, I'm like, oh, you just need to do this, and I fix it within 2 seconds. He's like, motherfucker, like why weren't you here 40 minutes ago? So
yeah, Yeah.
I think what would be an interesting conversation to go down seeing with you two are here. What was COVID like in the pharmaceutical world? Like, did it get busier? What was sort of what's the first story that comes to your head that just annoyed you so hard through the COVID world?
I'll let you go first, Maddie.
At the time when COVID started, I was a medical scientific liaison, which meant
that's a big title.
I know. Like, it sounds fancy. It's not that fancy.
That's what job titles are for, though, right?
Yeah. So 4 days a week, I'm interstate, and my whole job is training specialists on how to use quality use of medicines, right? I work in the medical team, not the sales. So just need to caveat that.
Well, just showing people how to use medical equipment, basically.
Not equipment. I was working in a kind of, I'm not going to say what it is, but it was like a new type of therapy that had never been seen in the healthcare system in Australia before. So training everyone on how to actually properly administer and keep your patients safe when you are administering.
And alive.
Yeah.
Cool.
So the biggest change was obviously I couldn't travel anyone, and I'd been telling the company this for years, like, you guys spend hundreds of thousands of dollars in travel for me every single year.
Hundreds of thousands.
Just for, if I'm at an airport 4 out of 5 days a week, usually on average about 8 flights a week, just to do a 20-minute training. I could do that. I could do that on the internet. And they're like, absolutely not. So all of a sudden, doctors who are historically refused to use technology were all of a sudden like, oh my God, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Yeah, of course.
But we also got a really good opportunity. So any of us that are also registered healthcare professionals, our company paid for us to go work in the hospitals. So I worked at the Sydney Children's Hospital in the COVID stuff, trying to get kids, because the really hardest thing to see, I work in cancer, wasn't actually the COVID itself. It was the fact that none of these kids could go in for blood transplants, so stem cell transplants, because the risk of getting COVID and then dying from that was too high.
Because they were already immune efficient.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the word? Immune efficient?
Immunodeficient. They're not efficient. It's the opposite.
They're really good.
They have really good immune when they got cancer.
So that was like a big eye-opener, was just seeing the public think that the whole problem with COVID was just like a cold or flu. It actually wasn't. It was all of these people that couldn't go in for life-saving surgeries because of the risk of COVID. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty eye-opening.
I think the problem that people had was people are so sheltered in their own life. Like if something doesn't affect them, where me personally, right, if I hear a story that's awful, all this stuff's going on, I'll feel bad for it. But as soon as I stop reading that story, I sort of forget about it. You know what I mean? Mm. But as soon as it starts, you start seeing it and how it's affecting other people, that's when it starts feeling real. So I don't think people are obviously not a bad because they don't think that. They just don't understand the real significance of it because they're not experienced at all. It's like cops, right? Cops, they see the worst of society because all their jobs are to go help usually bad situations. So that's why a lot of them either drink or get into really bad situations because they're just dealing with shit all the time.
Yeah, it was a pretty depressing time, that's for sure.
Oh, mate. Well, I mean, just working in cancer wouldn't be fun, to be honest.
It wouldn't be a fun time.
I don't think.
For me, it was just like, obviously, the lockdowns occurred, and just a lot of people calling up infuriated about things that they had misunderstood or misinterpreted, or they believed that was just factually incorrect.
Social media will do that to you.
Yeah, and just calling us up like really mad, and we just be like, well, you know, you're angry at misunderstanding. Mm. Like, you believe something that's not correct, and then your anger is unwarranted, you know? So like, I don't know how to help you, especially if you're not going to listen to me try and tell you. Like, when someone's angry, the last thing I want to hear is you're wrong.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. So it's so hard, you know. There was like people calling up saying like, the main one was people mad that they were forced to get a vaccine, and then they'd be mad at us, and we'd be like, well, you know that the states legislate that, not us. Like, we approved it, but we can't force anyone to have it. Yeah. That's not what our role is. The state government, they're like, well,
well, I tried to call them and they just...
I don't give a fuck about your opinion, dude. It's like one of this, because I kind of agree that like the whole vaccine was not handled correctly, like that well by the government.
Yeah.
Because I think everyone should have got vaccinated, but I think it still should have come down to some sort of choice. But as soon as they started, because what I didn't like is, especially in New South Wales, how they started, they kept saying that like the government cannot mandate this, but they were trying to force like companies to mandate it. They're like, we can't mandate it, but you can. So then they all of a sudden, if you didn't get the vaccine, you lost your job. They're like, oh no, you don't have to get it, but if you want to work, you do. So it was like this like underground, weird, dodgy way they were doing it. And I'm like, no wonder why there's so much distress and like all this argument going on, because it's not very clear what was happening.
I think what the biggest misunderstanding by the public was, and what everyone really fucked up in articulating to everyone, was we don't care about you getting the vaccination because we're concerned about you actually dying from it. Mm-hmm. We need you to get the vaccination because our hospitals are over full right now. So we cannot care for anyone else with any other kind of illness at all, because all they're doing is spending it on COVID. So like my patients can't get life-saving treatment. Cardiovascular patients can't get it. It actually had nothing to do with we think that you might die from it. It came from get out of our healthcare system, otherwise we're going to crash and people are going to die. That's why there's a reason there's been now an increase in diagnosis since COVID for cancer by over 30%. Because during that time, people were too scared to go to their doctors and too scared to go to the hospital with symptoms, understandably, right?
Yeah.
So massive underdiagnosis during that time has now led to a huge surplus of patients coming to us with now end-stage cancer, whereas if they had presented at the time they felt it, they would have been treated. Wow. So I think that's a big misunderstanding.
That's definitely – yeah, I can definitely see that. And I think – looking onto it, because this had never really happened in modern society, like there's such a big pandemic going down, there was not really any rule books or sort of like plans put in place as to what to do. So I was sort of like, I understood, because I'm just like, these people don't know what they're doing. Like they're just figuring out, trying to save people's lives, trying to figure out what the best thing to do is. So they're doing it trial by error. And people weren't willing to understand that. They're like, look, they're saying one thing and then they do another thing. I'm like, that's because they're figuring out as they go, man. Because you guys both work in sort of the medical world, in hindsight, do you think the COVID pandemic was overblown or sort of the correct way?
I don't.
Does that make sense?
Was it catastrophic?
What do you mean?
Yeah, I think it was catastrophized for sure.
Yeah. Do you think it was an overreaction how the world reacted to COVID, or do you think it was necessary?
It was necessary. As someone who was in the hospital, seeing how overwhelmed they were with truly sick people, like when people would be COVID deniers, like honestly, just come into a hospital and see them. These people are dying.
Yeah.
Definitely
COVID deniers are pretty dumb, because like, why would every country in the world destroy their economy for fun?
Yeah.
Like
what really pissed, like you're saying, like COVID deniers, what pissed me off is people that like, what's the word? They like downgrade the issue. They like make the issue not seem like, I remember I was on a thread online on Reddit or something, and people were like, not even that bad. It hasn't killed that many people. And I was like, it's killed 5 million people. They're like, yeah, and what percentage of the world's population is that? That's like 0. What? Like,
okay.
Wow.
Yeah, the survivors usually say it wasn't
and
that
imagine
bad.
If the world hadn't bloody reacted the way it did with emergency responses and lockdowns, like how many more people might have died?
Because I think, yeah, at the beginning, the lockdowns and stuff were definitely necessary. But then you look at sort of what China's doing now, where they're still, their COVID policy is still zero COVID. And it's not working. Like they'll lock down for like one case still, and then obviously it destroys their economy even more. But then it's not really helping.
Although you got to remember, like a place like China is so dense that even one case can become an outbreak like that. Whereas you think of a like Australia, we've got so much open space and so many small towns which are really isolated, that if a town gets an outbreak, it's a lot harder for it to spread across the state. Maybe if there was an outbreak in like Sydney or Melbourne, that would be an issue.
Well, that's why New South Wales got fucked, because of that.
Most of China is like massively densely populated cities that are really close to each other. So
it's easy to lock down in China because, you know, the government runs everything. So they're like, no one got to work. Fuck you.
And the lockdowns weren't the same across everywhere, right? Like even in Australia, Darwin never fully locked down. They had
Canberra was barely locked
down. Yeah, they had the strictest border controls, but they didn't lock down. I think the longest they did was like 3 days or 5 days or something like that.
They just fed the infected to the crocs.
Exactly.
Easy solution.
Well, because I was telling you this the other day, Matt. Like Canberra was like, we were in such a bubble for such a long time. Like we locked down the initial 3 months and everyone was like, oh, this is fucking great. Yeah, working from home, so good. And then after like that 3 months done, everyone sort of went back to work. And then for like a year and a half, we were fine. Like we were just watching the rest of the world burn and rest of Australia burn. Like, and Melbourne was just like the problem child of Australia. And we're like, what the fuck's going on down there? What the fuck, dude? And then like after that year and a half went past, then Omicron came out. And then, yeah, we locked down for like 6 months. And it was just rotating. Lockdown, lockdown, lockdown.
Maddie, I think you could appreciate the humor in this, right? Because you've worked in pathology and probably deal with it a lot. Is we'd have people calling us up, telling us that like, of all the things to get mad about, they were mad about the PCR testing.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, do you know the PCR testing isn't even accurate? Do you know that like they don't even do that many cycles, blah, blah, blah. Like, and I'm like,
how do they know that?
Any idea what you're talking about? And like, they'd be like, so we can't rely on them. I'm like, okay, well, how come all the major laboratories will use PCR testing to diagnose it? They're just like, oh, well, they're all being paid by Pfizer or something like that. Something ridiculous. And you're just like, it's like, as me who knows what a PCR test is and how it works, it's just so weird for me to think people are mad about that specific thing.
Oh, yeah.
And like, they want to call a complaint about it.
I feel like people just
a diagnostic test. Like,
people just find something that they've heard from Facebook or whatever, or from their friends. And then they latch onto that.
Oh, yeah.
And then they just have to run with that. But the problem is people don't do their own research. And I think that comes down to the mistrust in the government coming all the way back from, because they're just trying new things, trying to figure it out as they go, created the mistrust in the government. And then with the vaccine and, where they're like, they don't like vaccines? There's like the group. I forgot what they're called, but the anti-vax.
Anti-vax. That's it.
I forgot the anti part. But
yeah, yeah.
The anti-vaxxers were already such a big movement. And then when this came in, mixed with the mistrust of the government, mixed with all this confusion on COVID and stuff, not being able to go to work, like it was literally a cesspool of just everyone hating everyone. Like I'm surprised there wasn't a civil war, honestly. I mean, it was close. Like there was a lot of protests and stuff going on. But, like it was really dangerous,
it was,
I think.
Honestly, I don't have a lot of respect for the general public when it comes to this.
Either.
It's like the same thing as all of us thinking that we're IT wizards because we use YouTube every day. Like, no, we're not. The amount of people we had calling or picketing out front of our offices, and it was like, did you know that you're tricking everyone into having eggs in your vaccination? Because vaccines are created and it often uses chicken eggs. Like, guys, I hate to break it to you, but that is more than 90% of vaccinations available in the world today. Like,
I think
it's not a conspiracy theory.
No, I think the main thing is because like everyone was so scared that they rushed out the vaccine. They're like, it can't be right. It can't be right. And I'm like, I guarantee the world wouldn't allow it to happen. Like, if it was that dangerous. And obviously then you look at all the side effects that people got. You know, like, can you really say that's the vaccine though? Like,
I feel like, Zah, you can speak on that. The fact that TGA is notorious globally for being one of the most conservative regulatory bodies in,
really?
Maybe only beat out by MedSafe in New Zealand. Like, very, very conservative. That's why we're much slower than like the US or Europe to get.
As in, they check everything.
They are extremely thorough. Extremely thorough. Extremely high standards. So if anything, getting through fast, it should be congratulations, guys. You guys are legends for actually doing the level of quality it requires to get it through.
Yeah, it was all me.
Yeah. Just taking all the fucking calls, mate.
I wasn't involved at all.
Because I know there was a bunch of vaccines that got created that Australia was like, yeah, no fucking way that's coming over here, right? Because I think there was a Russian one, like the Sputnik or whatever it's called. But yeah.
Well, the thing that people don't understand that they get mad about is that like people will used to call up and be like, why haven't you approved this medicine? Like, why haven't you approved this medicine yet? And we're just like, well, our role, no, it's not that. It's our role is to not just go, hey, there's a cool medicine that's approved.
Yeah.
What, what they have to do, Maddie can probably vouch, is the company that makes the medicine has to come to the regulator with an application and go, hey, we've got this medicine. Here's all our scientific evidence that it cures this disease. We've got these testing. Here's our clinical trials. Here's all the evidence. And then the TGA or the FDA or whoever will look at all the evidence. They have a criteria that has to follow. They go, check, 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 check. Oh, this is, we've got a concern here. You need to go away, fix up mm-hmm. this, come back to us when it's fixed, and then we can consider your application. Then it gets approved.
Yeah. Wow.
Or then it'll go down the pathway. They'll do the preclinical trials, all this stuff. Like, we don't just go, yep, we like that one. That's approved. Like, the company has to put in a lot of work to get
a lot of work. Yeah. And a lot of people didn't really understand as why doesn't Australia have as many options. We don't have a big TGA. The team is actually very small that are reviewing these applications. And what everyone else seemed to forget as well is there is still clinical research happening in every other single field of healthcare, which we still have to get across the line. Every single other new treatment was delayed because COVID was prioritized. So should we spend our time approving every single one and looking at every single one? No, let's be smart about it and approve the biggest ones with the most substantial data behind it to support it.
I just don't want us to become like the states where they start advertising for every drug under
the
sun.
We won't.
Like, it blows my mind because we're sheltered in regard to their TV and stuff. But a friend was over there and he just took a filming TV, and every single second ad was an ad for some sort of pharmaceutical. Well, and you're like, luckily how is for it so you, big Tim, over there?
I work closely with the section that deals with advertising laws.
Really?
And the Therapeutic Goods Act has advertising laws as well. So in Australia, it's actually illegal, whether it's TV, internet, a magazine, to actually advertise anything that's considered prescription medicine or anything even considered pharmacist.
Well, anything you can't get over the counter, right?
Yeah.
You can get pharmacist only medicine over the counter, but you can't advertise it. Schedule 2, which is pharmacy medicine, which is things you can only buy at pharmacies, but not at like Woolies. Mm. Panadol, you can buy at Woolies. You can advertise that. If it's at a pharmacy, but you don't need like pharmacist advice to use it, you can advertise. But anything higher than that, it's actually illegal to advertise it to the public.
Man, Australia's such a good country.
Yeah. You can advertise it specifically to health professionals through certain
criteria.
Well, that's the only way.
So,
because they have to buy it, right? Does the doctor have to buy?
No.
Like, say, for instance, like,
well, it's basically just like education to doctors. Like, just be like, hey, there's this prescription medicine we've got for this treatment. Advertise it to health professionals so they're aware of the treatment.
Yeah. So in Australia, we have Medicines Australia Code of Conduct. And that's one of the teams I manage, is making sure that my industry are actually adhering to that and putting in complaints to the TGA and Medicines Australia when we see other companies are not doing it. This happens.
The competitors be like, fuck them up.
This happens constantly because every single thing that you say in Australia has to have what's called a qualifier, so aka a good reference to support that information. A huge ton of my work is looking at the industry as a whole constantly to see what are you advertising to the public, what are you advertising to the government, and what are you advertising to healthcare professionals, because even with them, there's extremely strict regulations around it. For example, working in a commercial role in pharma versus a medical role, a commercial person can never talk about a clinical trial because that's it's called off-label promotion. You're promoting something that doesn't have the evidence behind it that the health regulatory bodies have approved. So they're not allowed to speak on it. Yeah. Immediately, $250,000 fine to the sponsor.
Whoa.
So you can't be like, oh, Panadol will help with, I don't know what it is.
Period pain and migraines. They got sued for that.
Panadol will help with cold. It'll cure your cold symptoms. It's like, no, it's just it just numbs pain. That's all it does. So you can't advertise it for something it doesn't do. Hasn't been proven to do.
Wasn't there a bunch of, like, recently there was a bunch of things that got sued because of the way they advertised too? Like, because it was like common sense advertisement where they would say something as like, I think it was obviously out of the medical field, but like Red Bull got sued in some country because, like, they said that it gave you wings. Like, stuff like that, where it's like, it's so, you have to be so careful in regards to the wording that you say in ads because it's technically, even if you don't mean it like that, and it's clearly obviously not true, you can still get sued from it.
Well, even
and the medical industry would be way, way,
way more regulated. Like, but yeah. Even the over-the-counter stuff like Panadol, one of the biggest lawsuits we've ever seen in Australia was for Panadol advertising that their Panadol is targeted for migraines or targeted for period pain. And if you actually know the mechanism of action of Panadol, it cannot target one specific area of your body. It targets everything as a blanket. So they were sued for that and had to pay millions and millions of dollars for false advertising.
And it's interesting because you obviously you're saying the FDA advertise heaps of stuff. So it sounds like the USA has a lot lenient, lot more lenient advertising laws than Australia does.
So 580 million. That's crazy. Like that's Nurofen and Panadol. That's fucking owned, dude. That's so much money. But that's probably like nothing from what they actually
make.
This
is why if you're going to be in the pharmaceutical industry or the medical industry, make sure you have good legal advice and you seek regulatory affairs agencies about a lot of this stuff, because if you fuck it up, it's a lot of money. Yeah.
It also comes into a fact, like, look at the States. They have, like, such a big problem with Xanax and stuff because, like, there's so many people on Xanax just because it was just advertised as a way to clear your anxiety. And they're like, oh, I've got anxiety. I need that. But you don't actually need that. There's other ways to obviously clear it. Obviously not talking about, like, actually clinical anxiety, but... like just if you just have anxious, if you have an anxious day, people just pop Xanaxes, and I'm like, it's so bad for you. Like, Xanax is not good for you, and so many people are on it in America. It's actually crazy.
Yeah, there's a few. Like multiple areas that are a systemic problem in the US, which is why we are so stringent here. They can advertise directly to consumers, so patients, their doctors were getting direct financial kickbacks per prescription. You can't do that in Australia. There's many other countries in the world, New Zealand included, where you can advertise to patients. But they have other kind of areas where they block you from advertising inappropriately.
Isn't it only US and New Zealand that you can advertise to consumers for pharma?
Different countries in Europe can as well. It's varied all across the board, but overarching, if we kind of put a blanket statement on it, the US is the most lenient globally.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just looking at from over here, what's going on in regards to their pharmaceutical.
It's what I just thought. It's kind of funny that like USA had such lenient pharmaceutical advertising and stuff, but for a long period of time, pretty sure Australia was like the only or one of the only countries in the world that was allowed to do sports bet advertising, like sports gambling.
Really?
Yeah, like sports bet and all those ads and stuff and like betting on your multi and stuff. True. That was like only Australia. That was illegal in the US. I'm not sure. I think it's legal now, but Australia was like one of the only countries that allowed advertising.
I find it
gambling, like sports gambling.
Crazy. I didn't know that was a thing in Australia until I moved to New South Wales because it was against the law in the other states I've lived in. So I was like, what the hell? Really? You guys are like advertising betting here and drinking? Yeah. Like, that's not.
But then at the end, they're like, gamble responsibly.
Yeah.
So it covers them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like the sports bet ads. Like, and then it's
just like
you're going to lose more than
all
you
this
gain.
Money is like gamble responsibly.
Yeah. That's the same as the US medical ads where they're like, oh, look at this. Do you want to have rainbows and sunshine shooting out your asshole? Well, side effects do include.
Side effects may include. Yeah,
it's like, I love how
organized
the side effects.
Organized by Australian government came
out. Yeah, usually. Usually the side effects is like as long as the ads. They're like side effects mainly blah blah blah, blah dizziness, maybe death.
Yeah,
and it's like a disclaimer the whole length of the screen.
Do you want some constipation medication? Actually, and side effects are explosive diarrhea.
it's like people just ignore that part. Yeah. They're like, oh yeah, that seems like it would be good for my headache. Just like,
While we're still on this topic, I just love as well like people's like lack of trust in doctors and like they think that they know better than a doctor about their health.
Well, I googled it,
which I always find so interesting. Like I can think of an example when I was back
Google's
at the call
pretty smart
center
though
team. When I was at the call center team, this guy was calling up and he was really rude off the bat, really angry, and I was trying to be helpful. I was like, you need to stop interrupting and yelling, like tell me what your problem is. And essentially, his doctor had taken him off Valium because he was getting hooked on Valium.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically accurate. He was taking too much yeah. and his doctor said, I'm not prescribing you anymore because you're addicted. And then he called us being like, you have to tell my doctor to keep me on this substance. And we were like, what are we, the fucking mafia?
Yeah.
What like, do you fucking think mate, we are?
Go to this car park at 2 a.m. and you'll get some.
Yeah.
Is Valium like Xanax? Isn't it exactly similar?
Similar.
I don't know. It's something to do with anxiety. I think it's like a benzo. Is it a benzodiazepine or something? It's like anxiety. Like,
it's like Prozac.
Anxiolytic.
Yeah, anxiolytic. Basically, this guy just was like, oh, I read that it's really, really unhealthy to go cold turkey off this, but my doctor's done it. You have to tell me he can't do that. And I'm like,
apparently.
I kind of agree with him, to be honest.
Yeah, it sounds like
based on what
if you're addicted, you probably should stop. Apparently, yeah. So what Xanax treats anxiety as well as a panic disorder. Valium treats these and several other conditions. These conditions include muscle spasms, seizures, disorders, sleep disorders, and alcohol withdrawal. So yeah, if you're an alcoholic and you're trying to withdraw from alcohol, just get addicted to Valium. That's fine. Fucking dumb as shit. Like, it's so dumb.
Yeah, me it's quitting like replacing smoking.
One. Yeah, exactly. Dude, to be fair.
Don't even get me started on vapes, dude.
Vapes
don't
even are get so me bad. Started. But like...
Oh, vapes have just caused us a fucking headache for so long.
They're illegal now, right? Didn't you
haven't
guys
they always been?
Yeah, I think no,
there was some weird law around it. I don't know.
Who's the new health minister? Butler?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He recently... had a press conference, and I think he wants to ban all vapes.
I mean, smart.
Yeah, because as he should. Just, as he
yeah,
should.
Global, kids,
like, just national ban, just no more
it's,
vapes.
It's like...
What we had done with it was this, we made nicotine vapes prescription. So,
but you still got them, though. Like,
yeah, I mean, there's like, still a black market for them.
Well, it's weird, because you know when I was down in Canberra, right? Like, there was literally only one store that would sell nicotine vapes because it was, like, super, super dodgy. You weren't allowed to do it.
Yes.
So, yeah. So you go to the store, and then they would obviously have this huge markup on it. But it was, you get, like, these I-gets that were, like, you know, you'd get them. Maybe they would last 2 weeks or whatever, and they'd be, like, $40 or $30. And on value, if you're smoking cigarettes, it's definitely good value. Like, if you're going to try to get off nicotine, go to vapes. But that's bad because that's what I did. And then you end up getting more addicted to nicotine because you just do it more often. Like,
constantly.
I was literally like a pacifier,
yeah.
pacifier for me. It was always.
I sleep
hand.
With it just, in my hand.
Yeah, yeah, it's so bad.
Just get on the snus, dude.
What's the snus?
The nicotine pouches.
No.
What? What are you talking about?
Oh, they're like flavored, though.
What are
so
they? I don't need a new addiction.
These, like, little, they have these little pouches of nicotine that you just put in your mouth and it gives you a little. It's kind of like the gum, like you absorb it through your saliva, but you get like tins of them. And instead of actually smoking it, it's much more, it's much less dangerous because you're not inhaling smoke.
It's like cigars, like, right? Because you just,
well, you're getting the nicotine hit, but
yeah,
it's just like,
but then you do
saliva.
Look like one of those real hillbillies that's got the fat bottom lip, and you're spitting off to the side.
I'm just trying to help these nicotine addicts with their addiction.
Because is that like the chewing, is it similar to chewing tobacco?
It's similar, like, but it kind of just sits,
that's disgusting.
Yeah, you just kind of sit
it's
in
really,
there and you get the nicotine.
Yeah, it's really popular in the UK right now. Our friend Rachel.
Really?
Loves it. I'm like, you look like a 60-year-old hick from Texas. Like, stop.
Most of the pouches are coming out of Sweden. Sweden seems to be the biggest pouch producer.
Well, I kind of like what New Zealand's doing. Like, they completely banned tobacco sales for anyone that's under 18 at the moment.
Yeah.
And like, and that will continue to rise. So you'll never be able to legally buy cigarettes. And I'm like, that is interesting. I don't know if it will work because it will just create like like, obviously, if people can buy them, if I can buy them, people, other people will be able to get them. Like, that's the thing.
Well,
like,
yeah.
No matter what
did
you do,
prohibition work?
If people want them,
no.
They'll get them. No, exactly. So it's like, until you start completely banning cigarettes altogether or nicotine altogether, it's never going to work. But it is the right steps. And that's coming from a smoker. I'm a smoker, and I still want you to ban cigarettes. Because I know they're terrible for you.
I love that terrible we're all like, fuck the government. All these regulations on us. We want to live our lives. But actually, please, please help us.
Well, it's, yeah.
I can't think for
like,
myself.
Man, I can't.
I have no self-control.
To be fair.
Working for the government has given me an understanding of how tough it is to balance these things. And like, no matter what the government does, someone's going to be unhappy.
Oh, of course. Like,
with,
it could be like the most obvious decision to 99% of the population, be like, yeah, that's probably the right call. And then there'll be 1% of the population that are just furious. Like, how dare you restrict my rights?
Because look,
this place is, this is Nazi Germany.
It's police state.
Yeah.
But I would love to be able to just go and like get a gun and just, you know, be really cool with guns. And I'd love to be able to go like fucking airsoft and all that jazz. But at the same time, I also would like to go to school safely and like be able to walk down the street and not feel like I'm going to get shot. So like all those, the fact that like I've never ever been scared of getting shot in my life, it's worth not being able to go to airsoft and play with guns. You know what I mean?
I've never seen it, because it's like in the US when they're like, you can't take my rights. If someone came to me, and because I play hockey, and they were saying like, actually, hockey's been killing all of these children. Like, it'd be really nice if they stopped getting hit in the head with hockey balls and dying. Yeah, and like, yeah. I know it's going to be a bit of an inconvenience. I'm like, oh shit, I really love playing hockey, but you're right. I don't want children.
But then.
Exactly.
I'm a responsible hockey stick owner. And I don't.
I keep my
hockey
stick responsibly. In a safe.
Yeah.
Hockey doesn't kill people. People kill people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, mate. What I love about all the arguments in the States when they try to bring up gun control, and they're like, you can't regulate this. Like, I don't want to register this. I'm like, you already do. There is already gun control things in place. Like, but we just want to extend that. And it's the same argument. They're like, oh, I shouldn't have to register my gun. I shouldn't have to do this. I'm like, do you register your car? Yeah, you do, because it's a giant fucking death machine. And do you need a license to drive a car? Yeah. And everyone agrees with that. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, when guns are involved, they're like, no, you can't
do that.
It's
just like, you drive a car, if there's an accident, we know who's responsible. You can like trace it back. It's like with a gun, that's the only point of a gun is to cause pain and kill someone. Mm-hmm. That's like the only reason for it. A car at least is for transportation.
Yeah.
A gun. So it's like, you think registering a gun, there, if there is a incident with a gun, you know exactly who did it.
I think that's good.
Like, no, I don't want people to know that I shot someone. That's the point.
What do you mean? You're taking away my rights.
But you,
I want to
shoot
someone and get away with it.
If you have a property, you can shoot your cans. All you need to do is get a fucking registered firearm.
But what do you mean? I want to shoot it with my automatic rifle. Like, I want.
Yeah, my AR-15.
I want a bazooka. Like,
dude, the fact that they like when they're like they had this mad thing, they're like, maybe we'll get rid of the big guns. Fuck you! Don't take my guns. Like,
we got 8 minutes left. Should we do a bucket topic or two?
Yeah,
Timmy,
just throw out a bucket. Man, this has just been flowing so well.
It's been good. All right, I'll do mine first.
Well, I don't have any. I forgot to fill it up, so you'll just do your bucket.
You bloody...
I know. I think
I've got one. All right, just bear in mind, Maddie, some of these are really deep because we asked ChatGPT for some things, and it went really deep.
All right, forgive me if I go too deep.
I got two left.
This one is so deep. I feel like we've had this one. I'm going to do a different one. All right.
Ooh. That's a good question on what we're talking about.
Top three favorite fictional characters and why.
Oh, fuck. All right. Fictional characters across all. Whole. Fuck. That's a hard question.
See, I think of someone like Sherlock Holmes or something like that. Yeah. Like, so he's just like nothing gets past him. Yeah. Like, you could be super sneaky, and he'll figure it out. He's just like, I got you. I know what's going on.
Sherlock Holmes would be good if he didn't also have Asperger's and he's just like super awkward all the time.
Hey, motherfucker, you know? Watch yourself right there.
Nothing wrong with Asperger's, dude.
No, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with Asperger's.
You got a problem with Asperger's?
No, that's not what I'm saying. All right, let me make my point clear. What I meant was, if Sherlock Holmes had his like super investigative technology, right, or in his head, but also could communicate with people, he would be like the highest of all things. The main reason he is so solo is because he's a douchebag and doesn't know how to talk to people all the time.
Yeah.
Now's the time to tell you, Zah, I have autism, so. Just, you
know. I could tell. No, I'm kidding.
I sent him like a little note sheet of like whenever we have a guest on, I'm like, Maddie, she's lesbian. Works in the pharmaceutical industry. Just autistic.
He left that one out. Yeah. No, it's interesting because like I feel like a few people I know, they've told me they have autism, and it's like I could not haven't noticed or like I wouldn't have realized had they not told me. And I feel like
I suppose that's autism is
such an interesting it's such an interesting disorder. I don't even know if you call it a disorder or whatever you'd want to call it, because like
divergence
people divergence.
It's not a disorder.
I was watching you guys ever watch that YouTube channel and it's like the odd one out and they have like six people and then they have one person that's like pretending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So they did it with autism and there was some people on there. It was like, yeah, like they seem like they have autism. Like they've got that sort of awkward, like kind of like talk a bit weird. Like they have that like stereotypic autism, but then there was a couple on there that like, I was like, they're either fake or they just like, they don't have that stereotypical characteristics of what I imagine when I think of someone with autism. So It's an interesting spectrum.
I think the funniest time ever, because I only got diagnosed like a year and a half ago, and I was like, "Oh wow, that makes a lot of sense." What was when our mate Sean was in my lounge room, came over, just having a couple of drinks, chatting, and there's a group of people there. Sean is the only one that didn't know I have autism, and he starts railing on autistic people. Saying this effing weirdo, blah blah blah, like they're so strange, and I was like, everyone in the room started looking at me like, this is uncomfortable because Maddie's recently told us she got diagnosed, and I was like, at what point do I say, I had to, sorry, Sean, at this point, like just to let you know, I'm autistic. Immediately, he's like, oh my god, are you okay?
No, that must be so. It's like a cancer.
I've never seen a switch of how to be treated so quick. Where I was like, I was clearly the disabled person immediately in his mind.
Well, it's just like that's something I would do. Where you just like you say things where you're not speaking. You're speaking in like overall terms, but you're speaking out a specific individual.
Yeah,
and then you end up getting yourself in trouble all the time.
Yeah,
I would do.
That's why I let him keep going for a while. I want to see what you say.
You're a bitch. One of our friends down in Canberra, like he has autism, and he was telling me when he goes to parties, because when he's just individual with us, he was fine, talked to us easily. It was like really, I'm pretty sure he had like savant syndrome. He was like, he's like one of the smartest people I've ever met about anything. Right, you'll ask him about something, he'll be able to tell you everything to do with like an engine or anything like that.
Yeah, if it interests him, he'll know.
Like, yeah, he'll know everything about it. Right.
Yeah.
But then when you go to parties, I would always say, I'm like, why are you so quiet all the time at parties? He's like, this is exactly why. Whenever someone comes up to me and says something, I have to think of every scenario and every reply before I even say anything. By the time I think of every scenario and every reply, it's already been too long and it's too awkward. So then it ends up just dying. And I'm like, man, that's a really shit way to live at parties. Because at the same time, I kind of want that because I'm the opposite, where I'll just say anything that comes to my mind and usually get in trouble later, where he actually thinks about what he says.
You want a cheat way to spot an autistic?
Yeah, go on. How do I spot one in the wild?
Is at a party. See who changes the most when they drink, and if they get the drunkest, and if they've gone from being the quiet person to the insane person. Wow, they've just used alcohol to unmask, and that's the tree there. Me.
Interesting. So wait, I've seen you drunk. I've seen you drunk. But like, so you say that alcohol like just lowers their inhibitions a lot more.
Yeah, alcohol is you can't control that it's unmasking you. So you don't even realize, especially if you're a late diagnosed autistic person, that you're masking constantly, and why you then rely on other things like alcohol. And it's just because you cannot function when you're being overwhelmed. So you'll drink even more. And then if there's that huge significant change from a sober state in a group environment to a drunk state, it's probably someone who has some form of neurodivergence and they've been
forced. when you were diagnosed, what was like, was there something about your personality that you couldn't like, you didn't know? And then when you were diagnosed, you're like, oh, that explains everything. Like, was there something that like, you were like, oh, that's why.
I got diagnosed with autism and ADHD at the same time. I've been historically a real emo bitch my whole life, like just depressed. Probably because I'm like, I just feel
like you said that with such a smile. I'm so depressed.
You gotta laugh. And so when I first got diagnosed, it was kind of like, oh shit. Oh, that makes so much more sense. But it was really bad because I was like, oh, now I've always suspected I'm a weirdo. Now it's confirmed I'm a weirdo, and there's nothing I can do to change it. But then the light bulb moment later on was like joining them together. And I was like, actually, it's the favorite parts of myself and also my least favorite parts is those things. So it's just coming to terms and accepting it. But yes, there was a lot of light bulb moments.
I often think that I have ADHD.
Like, you're honestly, 1,000,000,000%.
Yeah. I often think I have it, but I refuse to get tested because I'm just like, I don't want to know. I don't want to know. And like, unless it's like, because when I read about like the symptoms of ADHD, I'm like, yeah, that sounds pretty much like me. Mm. Like super just talkative, really loud all the time. But then what really, really, I noticed it the other day, I was like, all right, I'm going to clean the house today. And I was like, all right, I'll start from one side of the house and I'll work my way up. And so what would happen is I'd be in the lounge room and I'd clean up all the plates, whatever, take the plates to the kitchen. And then I'm like, oh, what the fuck? And then I'd have to clean the bench in the kitchen before I go back to the lounge room. And it's just like starting all these little jobs just to complete one big job. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure this is like the main characteristic of ADHD. And I like had a real thought about today. I'm like, maybe I should get tested. But I don't want to know. It's not affecting my life, so I don't really care.
Yeah, like I feel like knowing it for sure won't make any difference unless like what you're getting a medicine for it.
Yeah.
Like if you know you have it, you're just like, oh, okay, continue being ADHD.
I disagree. It helps so much because I didn't realize how different my brain worked to everyone else. I just assumed everyone kind of had the same thought processes. But like I remember my psychiatrist saying to me, she's like, let me guess. You did really, really well in school. Like, you're really smart. And I was like, yeah, yeah. Did pretty well.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like, but then you also got in trouble a lot and did a lot of different things, right? And I was like, yeah. She's like, so do you have, like, a lot of hobbies where you're, like, really good at certain things but never actually finish them? And I was like, yeah. You can see behind me, like, I've been trying to pack my house. I've got 1,000 different hobbies that I've started, gotten really good at, but then my autism helps me hyper-focus, but then the ADHD is like, I'm bored, on to the next, and I won't go back to it for, like, another 3 years. But okay. It does help.
I just looked up the symptoms for ADHD. I'm pretty sure I've got 3 out of 4. Like, it's like you're often late. Time management is ongoing challenge. I'm like, yeah, probably. You have trouble concentrating. Yep, definitely. You leave things undone, 100%. And you had you had behavior issues as a child. Actually, I'm pretty sure I got 4 out of 4. Like, fuck. All right. Let's just quit. I just got this one thing because it's really it sort of relates to what's going on. What do you think is the greatest challenge facing humanity today, and how can we address it?
That is a deep question.
It's deep, deep. We don't have to go into too much detail.
Biggest challenge?
Capitalism.
I don't know if we can fix that.
Those damn communists.
I don't know. We're going to. Yeah. Well, I didn't realize we had a communist on the show. But if you're not a capitalist, would you class yourself more as a socialist then? Or what would you.
Can honestly say, Tim, I don't think I've ever fit into one specific group. Yeah, I just think what we're doing right now is absolutely terrifying.
What I think is bad is it's all grandfathered in now, mm-hmm. because it's like it's been around for so long that no one really can think of another way to run a country or run a government or anything like that. We haven't seen another thing that works yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So like socialism is a good idea. Like, I like the principle of it, but I just don't know if it'll work. I haven't really seen any experiences of it actually working in a country yet.
Yeah, I think there's...
Same in communism. Yeah. Communism is one of the worst, I think.
They have pros and cons to all of them. It's like, I don't want the extreme of any of them. Can we just like have like a nice little mixy mix in the middle?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, say for instance, the world died tomorrow. Some like a zombie apocalypse or whatever. Communism will work well in those situations because you're usually in a smaller group where everyone has a task to do, and everyone's going out, like the hunters will go out and hunt for the whole pack. And I think that's when communism would be perfect because everyone has their own space, but it doesn't work when you start getting into the millions and millions of people because it just creates corruption.
Yeah.
Easily. Yeah. Someone at the top, if everyone's getting all the stuff, people are going to be dicks. And I think that's where it doesn't work in the large scale of things. But
mine is a lot more, mine's not as, I think, philosophical. I don't know if you'd call it philosophical. Mine is just, I think the world most of the world is not putting enough emphasis on education.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
I think education and teachers needs to be more funded. They need to give teachers more money. Yep. They need to be more people interested in becoming teachers and educating the young people, because there is a lot of dummies in the world.
Mm-hmm.
A lot. I blame
social media is ruining it, I think.
Yeah.
I think there's things in the world that we can easily solve, but it's not a priority. Like, I think I watched... You'll like this. I watched it. Was on Bill Maher and Elon Musk were on a show together, and he said, he's just like, why would we go to Mars when we're running out of resources here, right? Why can't we just he's like, we're not running out of resources here. Like, this is what Elon said. He's just like, what do you mean? We have heaps of resources. He's just like, we're gonna run out of water eventually. He's like, it's actually really cheap to desalinate water. Like, and then Bill Maher's like, why don't we fucking do it then? He's just like, these little things that could literally solve so many problems.
So why is Elon pushing for us to all move to Mars then?
Look, I'm not going to get into that with you, Max. All right? I'm not going to get into
capitalism.
That but the thing is, it's not Elon's responsibility to desalinate all the water either. But I think as a humanity as a whole, where our priorities aren't like, and it comes back to our full circle at the beginning where we said, unless something relates to you personally, it's really easy to just write it off.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not dying of thirst.
Yeah.
So it's really easy for me not to care about, and like, also, the lack of water.
Can we please quickly touch on the fact that, like, why the fuck would we want to go to Mars? Do you really want to look outside your window and just see desert and ugly ass shit? Like, can we just, like, save the planet we're on so we get a nice view at least? Like, come on. Why are we going to Mars?
I assume the idea is to give it an atmosphere and create plant life. Yeah. I assume that would be the idea.
That's like an overassumption of the human capabilities and intelligence right now.
I feel like it's definitely possible. But the thing is, like, even Elon said, he's just like, oh, dude, don't go there. It's not going to be fun for the first, like, 100 years. You'd be living in bubbles. You could die every day.
Thinking Matt Damon in that movie where he's just growing potatoes.
in his own shit.
In Martian, yeah. He's growing potatoes on Mars or whatever, and he's, like, trapped there. Yeah.
I mean, it's possible. What I liked about The Martian is that was still based somewhat in science, the way that they worked it, because it's like based in science. Obviously, it's science fiction, but like, because in the hab that he had in that, he created his own environment. That's the only reason why he was able to, you know, farm on Mars, is because he had to create his own environment.
I think probably our biggest problem as humanity is overestimating our intelligence, though, in that. If we think that we fully understand the complexity of Earth and how every single thing works together to create a sustainable environment in another planet manually, guys, we're not that smart yet.
Oh, yeah. No, we'd have to terraform the whole planet, which would be fucking hard. But what I was looking at it before is just like, you can try to terraform the planet, which is basically just make it hotter.
Mm-hmm.
Make it warm it up, right? So he said that there's two ways to do it. You can either set nukes off at the poles to melt them, and that will warm the place up. And I'm like, that's a supervillain thing to do, but okay. And then
like Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
He's like, just nuke the poles in Mars.
$1 million.
but what I don't understand is, because Mars doesn't have a magnetic field. So how would they create a magnetic field to protect? Because you can create, like, you can warm the planet up, but wouldn't it just get fucked up by the solar winds anyway if there's no magnetic field there? I don't know. It's a science above my pay grade.
We should probably wrap it up. We're going another half an hour about Mars and all this science.
It's probably wise move.
No, this has been a great episode. Thanks for coming on, Maddie.
Thanks, Mads.
By the way, my girlfriend has the same mug as you, the witch mug. Is that what you... Yeah.
Witch brew.
That's her favorite mug. It's been a great
I'm glad
episode.
You came on, Mads. Mads was really upset with me because I went through all of our other friends before I invited her onto the podcast.
Rude.
And she was like getting mad at me for a while.
Well, thank you for coming on promptly and you're not flaking and all that other things. Yeah. So we appreciate it. And it was a great episode. The conversation flowed. I learned a lot. I hope everyone else learned a lot. I hope the listeners had fun.
Well, we will see you guys. Hopefully this will be out this week. So hopefully in the next 2 weeks, we'll have two more episodes coming up.
We'll wrap up the season.
And then we'll wrap the season up and then we'll figure out what we're doing next time. So, but we love you all and thank you. And we'll see you guys soon. Stay average.
Stay average.